around in this great big city. Fast money and the life will never show you no pity. Oh, I work hard trying to make my bones, but times have changed and I just got to move. I can't run away, I can't run away, I can't run. I can't run away, I can't run away from the things that I've done.
Welcome to Writer's Tricks of the Trade. I'm Morgan St. James, and I'll be your host for the next 30 minutes, along with my co-host, Dennis N. Griffin.
And tonight, we're doing a special holiday show about writing books and stories for the holidays. And Christmas isn't the only holiday that is primed for books or stories with that theme.
Well, you know what? Since it's Christmas Eve, Denny, why don't we talk about books or stories with a Christmas theme? Let's see. It's Christmas Eve, and the elves are busy zipping around with Santa. So what happens next? This is something that can trigger stories for kids from 2 to 92, and there's no telling what can go wrong or right, but whatever it is, depending upon the age range, that simple question is the basis for anything from humor to romance to mystery and more. Let's assume it's fiction. Let the imagination run wild. My imagination was running all over the place. So what could really happen? You got it. Dipping too much eggnog. Well, let's think. Maybe it's something that will ruin Christmas for millions around the world if it isn't fixed. You know, that's not terribly original, but it's a good theme for a kid's book. That terrible something is where the author's imagination kicks in.
You know, Morgan, I was just, as you were talking there, something came to mind, and perhaps we can touch on this during the show. When Christmas is obviously a joyous season and so forth, and people, you know, some people, not just kids, but some adults actually look forward the whole year to Christmas. But there are also people at Christmas time who are sad and depressed, people who have maybe recently lost a loved one or that type of thing. And is it possible, do you think, to do a Christmas story that also takes into consideration that some people may be experiencing difficult times over the holidays?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, it really is a difficult time if you've lost a loved one or if you've had something tragic or if you're very ill. And I imagine that it's really hard to have everybody around you be so happy when you feel lonely, you know, and there could be all kinds of stories that come in from that, ranging anywhere from the person turning into a Scrooge because of this to concerned neighbors or friends, you know, dropping in to make the day better and what could come from that. Yeah, I think there's all kinds of meat for that, and my heart goes out to those who are experiencing that. You know, I know even myself, I'm used to having big family dinners in Los Angeles, and our Los Angeles family unit has kind of fallen apart. So when it comes to Christmas, unless we're getting together with friends, it's just my husband and I now, no big family dinner.
It's a whole different ball game, isn't it?
Yeah, it sure is. It sure is. So, you know, on a lighter note, I'm trying to think of what could happen. Let's say, I'm going to throw one at you. Let's take an adult fantasy where the wrong gifts are delivered. Why don't you come up with a scenario on that? You know, maybe a guy dating a girl and best friends with another one.
Yes, now, this is, I'm going to tell you something based on a true story. I know a fellow actually did this.
Okay, cool.
He was divorced, and had been divorced, well, maybe a couple of years. It hadn't been all that long. And he had a new girlfriend, and he had, I think it was two young children that were with his ex-wife. And he decided, I think one of his motives might have been that he was going to, you know, possibly for child support purposes, he wanted to keep a good relationship with the ex. And he got the gift screwed up, and the gift that should have gone to his girlfriend was actually the gift for his wife, his ex-wife. And when the girlfriend got it and saw the, oh, honey, I miss you type stuff, it did not go over very well at all. And the guy had some, as they say, splaining to do.
Yes, I would guess so. And the question is, did one of them get a lump of coal?
Well,
you know, coal is
really
a diamond, but...
yeah.
But if it hasn't been compressed yet, it's just plain old coal.
Well, this poor soul ended up spending pretty much Christmas by himself.
Wow, talk about a backfire. But look what a neat story that would make if you were doing a book and then or a short story, and you could go on from that, use that as the platform and just jump right off on it.
Right.
Think about all the different things. And, you know, that's kind of where that what if test comes in. You always look at things, and there's always more than one way for things to go. And, you know, to any of the authors that are listening, this doesn't only apply to writing holiday stories. It applies to every kind of story. Is that what-if test can just really trigger a whole bunch of things that you weren't even thinking about when you decided to write this particular story. It's like, you know, the fork in the road. Which one do you take? And what happens if you go that way? So, you know, they can go in so many different directions. They can go fiction, nonfiction, humor, romance, thrillers, whodunits, fantasies, sci-fi. Well, I don't know if they have Christmas in the sci-fi, but yeah, maybe. And
maybe.
You know, and they're such ripe playgrounds for the author to add twists. You know,
yeah,
think about,
you know,
the movie It's a Wonderful Life.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
I thought you were going to tell me how it could have taken so many different directions.
Well, now, just thinking, my wife has been watching all these Christmas movies. I think it's the Hallmark Channel or one of those that she's into. And I have been present to listen to at least parts of some of them. And there are,
you mean,
some
she really lassoed you and got you to listen to them, huh?
Well, pretty much that's the case, yes. But really, I've watched probably at least a good portion of three or four of those movies. And my fear was, I guess, that it would be the same plot over and over. That was going to be the same story with different actors. And that was not the case. The movies that I watched with her, at least watched a lot of the movie, were actually kind of interesting. And, you know, that's not my bag. Normally, I'm into blood and gore type stuff, but but they were really well written. Whoever did the scripting, and I thought they were enjoyable to watch. So, and there are multiple scenarios, as you said, that you can come up with. Most of the ones I saw all were romance, at least partially. You know, single parents finding each other over the holidays and that type of thing. But they were all enjoyable to watch, and there were different twists and turns. And I actually, it wasn't as bad of an experience as I had been fearing.
Well, you know, that's the thing that we're kind of talking about here now, is that you don't have to go into a stereotypical type of story. You know, think about Bad Santa, the movie Bad Santa. And, you know, that was the exact opposite of any romance, warm and fuzzy, at least in the beginning. I mean, you've got this miserable con man and his partner who poses Santa and his little helper because they want to rob department stores on Christmas Eve. And, you know, then they run into problems because the con man befriends a troubled kid and the security boss discovers the plot. And I mean, those stories can go in any direction, and that's what kind of makes it fun. When you're the author, you're in the driver's seat, you decide what's going to happen. Maybe it seems like it's going to be a warm and fuzzy thing, and then there's some kind of a twist that takes it in a whole different direction.
Very true. And now, have you personally ever written a Christmas story?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I did. I wrote a little book that is just on Kindle, and it's called Two Unforgettable Christmases. And these are actually two short true stories about Christmases that they've just remained etched in my memory throughout my life and also in my sister's memory. Because Christmas is so centered around consumerism now. I mean, look at the people running to the stores who can't wait to throw their money at things that might be forgotten after a day or two. Okay, so I wanted to write about something that I felt should be the true spirit of the holiday, love and caring. And we'd moved to Florida from Chicago when I was 9 years old. And let me tell you, that was a real disaster. I mean, the work was seasonal. My father's arthritis killed me. I know you're in Florida, but my dad had arthritis and was looking for a warmer climate than Chicago and goes into this extreme dampness that had him just in misery. And so it wasn't a very happy time when Christmas rolled around. And except for my aunt, his sister, who lived in Miami, it would have been one of the worst ever holidays. I mean, we celebrated Hanukkah, and my aunt brought us a little Christmas tree. And it was just that little spot of sunshine in the middle of agony. And it didn't involve expensive gifts because for the first time in my short life at that time, we were poor. My dad wasn't earning a living. We were living in a way that we weren't used to. And actually, we only stayed there 10 months. By the time I was 10, we were back in Chicago. And a 10-year-old doesn't really realize what being really broke means. But my parents finally had to explain to my sister and me that there wouldn't be any gifts that year because moving back took all the money they had. And until my dad got on his feet, there just wasn't going to be any money for things like Christmas gifts. Because now that we'd had the Christmas tree the one year, now we were celebrating Christmas, kind of. And on Christmas morning, you know, we got up expecting that there would be no gifts. And meanwhile, we'd still hung our stockings up on the fireplace mantle because you know how little kids are. I mean, they have this faith that something is going to happen, something's going to intervene. And sure enough, when we went to our stockings, there were little gifts in it, not anything that cost very much money, maybe a pencil wrapped up in, you know, pretty paper or a couple of pieces of candy. But whatever it was, our parents tried to make it something that was good for us. And somehow they'd gone out during the night and found these things and wrapped them. And like I said, we've never forgotten it because that was what it was supposed to be about. It wasn't supposed to be about the next latest, greatest, can I get the last one in the store? And do you have any stories for Christmas that you've written?
I've never written a book. I did have it was going to be a short story. I never finished it, but the impetus for that story, I was going to call it The Checkbook. And my granddaughter, I believe at the time, was probably 6 or 7. And we asked what she wanted for Christmas. And she said a checkbook. Because she thought, she didn't realize you had to have an account and deposit money. She just thought if you had a checkbook, you know, you could buy whatever you wanted. You know, whatever. So yeah. I was going to do a short story based on that scenario, and I never did it. I started it, and I never got anywhere with it. But
well, you know, that's like one of the dumb blonde jokes where, and I used to be blonde, so I can say that without being biased or prejudiced. that's where the blonde says, how can I be out of money? I still have checks in my checkbook. You know, I see we have a caller on the line, and I'm going to answer. Hi, welcome to Writer's Tricks of the Trade. Who have I got there?
Hi, it's Carolyn Howard Johnson wishing you
a Merry Christmas.
And congratulations on a wonderful new Blog Talk radio show.
Oh, thank you so much. You know, I have to tell our listeners, Carolyn Howard Johnson is the consummate book promoter. In fact, she's going to be our guest on January 14th. So don't miss that show because you'll learn all of her inside tricks. So, Carolyn, I think you've written some things about holidays, haven't you?
Well, yeah, I really believe in writing things for holidays to help with promotion. So I was glad to hear that, and I was glad to hear your guest talking about frugality. I think a lot of authors spend way too much money before they know whether they can make it back, especially the self-published authors or the new first-time authors. So two really important subjects. Yeah. I hope you glean a huge audience to listen to him when this is released. It's Christmas Eve, right, that it's coming out?
Which one are you speaking of?
The one you're talking about now. The one you're recording right now.
Oh, this broadcast. Yes, this is our pre-recorded Christmas Eve broadcast. And so people can't call in, but we did give you the phone number.
Right. Well, you know me, and you know how
I know you.
So.
I know you. I know if I hadn't given you the phone number and you were listening, you'd find a way to get to us, because you are, after all, the consummate book promoter.
Oh, thank you.
You know,
I don't want to take too much. Go ahead.
Oh, stay on the line for a minute. I wanted to share something that I read on Facebook, which was just great, from Sarah Paretsky. And, you know, she's the author who brought V.I. Warshawski to life, and I love following Sarah's posts. And this one was great. It was a little Christmas Hanukkah story, just a little short thing on Facebook, but it was so cute I felt I had to read it on this show. And she said, Hanukkah is happening this week, and I was remembering a year in which my brother Dan and I were trying to pep up our dusty and rather dreary house, imitating Christmas decorations we saw all around us. We put up blue and white streamers, which gave the living room the feel of a tired bordello. But then, piece de resistance, we created a giant mouse out of cardboard. Why a mouse, you ask? Because our mother many years earlier had conjured mouse, who brought good, or at least not hideously bad, little Paretskys a special present on Hanukkah and birthdays. Well, Dan's and my mouse, 5 foot high in its stocking feet, looked like the most malevolent rat imaginable. We'd spent so much time cutting and gluing and painting, though, that we hung it from the living room chandelier, long yellow fangs and all. Our youngest brother, Nick, not quite four, saw it and became hysterical. I can't remember what, if any, reaction our parents had. I hope wherever you are and whatever you're doing, it's way more festive than that.
Oh, it sounds like her books will be delightful. Everybody needs a smile at Christmas, because in spite of the fact that everybody says that it's a wonderful season, and of course it is, there's also a lot of sadness and family issues, and, you know, so sometimes we need a sparking up.
Yeah, that's what we were talking about earlier, about how difficult this time of year can be for people who have lost loved ones, or if they're ill or having tremendous money problems. And Lord knows there's enough of that in the United States now and around the world. I mean, it's not something that is... And it's hard. It's hard to see everybody around you happy and spending money and looking forward to big dinners and, you know, the whole thing. And there that person sits dealing with their own problems.
And then there's just the average everyday stress. You know, that my daughter said that there's a whole underground out there that comes out from under the ground at Christmas time and gets and brings their most rude selves with them. So, you know, the drivers get more obnoxious and people are giving you the finger. You know, it's really bad. You know, it's like, where did you put your Christmas spirit, you know? And ditto for Hanukkah, you know, I'm sure.
Yeah, the Hanukkah is no exception. You know, And that's yeah. 8 days, not just one.
Yeah, yeah, true. I pity the poor Jewish mom who has to make 8 dinners.
I'll tell you, ladies, something. I had to go to Walmart today, and my God, you take your life in your hands. I mean, the parking lot looked like one of those demolition derbies. There was brakes and people hollering and the finger salutes. And
oh, yeah, there you go.
Everybody wanted that parking place closest to the door. And oh, my God, it was really amazing. And I just had to go in and do a return. An item I bought wasn't the one I needed, so I took it back. So I only had to go into the front part of the store where the customer service desk was. But, I mean, it was just a madhouse. And I said, oh, my God, let me get out of here and not come back till after the holidays.
Well, but, that shopping thing at Walmart, it's like, sorry, but why would anyone go there anytime? We have a greeter at the door, and then from then on you never see a soul and can't find anything. I don't know. Everybody has different priorities, but they're not my favorite. You shouldn't have brought the subject up, right?
Sam's Club has chickens that are just as good as the ones from Costco, and we don't live near a Costco, so now we go to Sam's Club. And I brought home one of the rotisserie chickens yesterday, and my husband said, oh, you went to Sam's Club. I said, are you out of your mind? A couple of days before Christmas to go to Sam's Club? No, I went to Smith's. I mean, there was no way I was going to try to fight those crowds in order to get a little chicken.
Yeah. And you're standing there in the line nine or less, and it's roving clear out the front door.
Right.
For one chicken.
For one chicken.
Yeah. You know, well, I want to tell you, my refrigerator is really empty right now because I won't go to the store at all, and it just keeps. I keep thinking, I wish I could put this with
it's
that.
It's a different kind of chicken.
Yeah.
You know, I was going to say, since we all like mysteries, I had this one little thing that I had prepared here for this show, and I think we'll all enjoy it. It was, you know, Agatha Christie. She got into the act with a couple of Christmas mysteries that I know of. And there was one, Hercule Poirot's Christmas. It's Christmas Eve, and the Lee family reunion is shattered when the tyrannical Simone Lee is found dead in a pool of blood, his throat slashed. Now, this is a whole different kind of Christmas story, right?
Hercule Poirot
offers to assist, he finds an atmosphere not of mourning, but of mutual suspicion. And it seems like everyone had their reason to hate the old man. So, you know, in the inimitable Christie way, her setup was beautiful, and that's one of the reasons I wanted to mention this, because people think, you know, you have to start with the holiday and blah, blah, blah. Well, this opens up with Stephen, who's a man of about 40, and he's traveling to London by train, and he really doesn't want to be there, and he's walking through the different train cars, and he spots this beautiful woman wearing shabby clothes as he walks between the cars. And Christie does reveal that both of them are thinking what they've come to London to do without revealing exactly what that is. And it seems almost incidental that it's only 3 days before Christmas. So, of course, being that it's Agatha Christie, can murder be far off? And what's the connection going to be between these two people? You know, that's what I was kind of going for with this show, is that you don't have to go with the stereotypical things. There are just all kinds of avenues open. Didn't you do some poetry? You did a poetry book on the holidays?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I was going to offer that to you and your listeners. All they would have to do is email me at hojonews@aol.com, and I will send them a Christmas poetry chapbook that my co-author, Magdalena Ball, she's an Aussie, and we wrote this long distance. She's in one hemisphere, I'm in the other, thanks to the wonder of the web, right? And so,
you bet.
They're welcome to it, because it was originally not done as a promotional book, but you know, any book can be used as promotion at Christmas or any other time. And if you do a seasonal book, They're good year after year after year. They don't, you know, they don't go away. You can do a whole new round, of promotion for it every time, that's important if you've got something that you can repeat, as opposed to starting fresh with a new campaign. It's a wonderful thing. So
you know, that's
called,
really a good point.
Yeah, and it's called Blooming Red, which we were going to change the title because it came from one of my poems, and I thought it was time that she got one of the titles taken from one of her poems. But she said, oh, no, she's got this British thing going, being from Australia. She said, oh, no, there's a double meaning to Blooming Red if you are a if you're a Brit. And I said, oh, yeah, of course. So you can see that this is Christmas with a little edge. So it works for for Hanukkah types, too.
Well, that's for sure. You know, having a daughter in England and a son in Australia, I know exactly what the other meaning of Bloomin' Red is.
Bloomin' that, huh? Yeah. We don't have quite an equivalent in the U.S., but...
Yeah, and you guys have won quite a few awards on your books, on your poetry.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, I believe in awards for promotion, so I encourage everyone to try to get at least one. It doesn't have to be the top award either. It can be just my frugal editor just won an honorary mention, an honorable mention from Dan Pointer's awards. It's called Global eBook Awards. And
oh, I know those awards.
You know,
yeah,
I'm happy. Yeah, I'm happy with an honorable mention. You get that word honorable. So, you know, I don't have to wait around to be number one to get some use out of an award.
Yeah, well, you feel the same way, don't you, Denny? I mean, I know I've gotten best book, and I've gotten honorable mentions, and every time there's an award, it's just thrilling because that means that there were a lot of people that probably entered the award arena, and you were the one that was chosen. Either if you're, top of the heap, you were the one that was chosen, and if you're an honorable mention, man, you share that with, that distinction with a lot of people that have won awards, and it's a recommendation of your work. It's a confirmation of your talent.
Denny, as you know, the reader isn't as fussy as we authors are. They just see that beautiful gold sticker sticking on your book when at the back of the room, and it sets the book apart. So.
Getting into the cons we were talking about in Bad Santa, the con artist. What about the author who prints up their own stickers?
Nobody's
ever heard of.
Some of those contests are so chintzy, they don't give you any, so you've got to print up your own. But we want to be ethical about it. If you didn't win anything, best not to fake it. I hadn't heard anybody doing that yet.
I know people who would do it. I don't know that I've heard of it being done, but I've heard people that would do it. Well, we're going to have to wrap up in a few minutes. Scott, this has been fun, hasn't it?
Glad I called in. And best luck to both of you. It's a very exciting time. Very exciting time.
Oh, yes, it is. And we really look forward to having you as our guest.
As long as you're running people who are telling authors things they need to know, just count on me, and I'll stick it in my newsletter and give it a little extra.
That's terrific.
Give each one
you
of your
what?
Shows
I'll
a little extra push. Yeah, put
terrific.
Me on your calendar.
I'll keep you updated.
Okay, sounds good.
All of our shows are designed to really be helpful to authors. You know, we kid around, we yak, we make some jokes, but in between it all, there's always valuable information.
Exactly. So we'll work together on this. And also, one more tip for you, and it's a tip for everybody. Fran Silverman has a wonderful series of books about getting on the radio, and she has divided them into specific topics. So although she has one that was published by Macmillan that covers just radio in general, which is a giant, giant reference and costs a fortune, she also has these little, much smaller little booklets where she's divided the shows that are available down into smaller segments. So there's one for people who've written books about sports, one that's for people who've written book about animals, etc. And you guys should be in that book. So be sure and contact her. It's Fran Silverman, and if you need her email address, send me and I'll send it to you. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and that's the other thing, getting great guests, right?
Yeah,
you guys are up to that.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. But she's a perfect place to be when you start running out of ideas. That could happen.
It could. You're right.
It could, yeah. Yeah. Okay. Have a wonderful Christmas, and I will see you in January 14th.
Okay, great. January 14th.
I think it's 6 o'clock Pacific time, right?
Yes, 6 o'clock Pacific time,
yeah.
9 o'clock Eastern time.
See you then.
Okay.
I used to see on the radio.
Thank you,
okay.
Carolyn.
Thank you, Denny. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay. Well, here we are at 1:31.
Okay.
Are you signed? Okay, so why don't we sign off now? Just give a little background on you and I, and for people who haven't listened to our show before. I've written 12 books and over 600 articles about the craft and business of writing, and I frequently appear on panels or give workshops. Denny's written 16 books, many of them dealing with the life of former mafia members. And he's appeared on TV or as a speaker, panel moderator. He's hosted radio shows for the past 7 years. And Denny and I co-authored La Bella Mafia together, the upcoming Izzy and Me, and we're currently working on a third book together. And so for everybody listening, until next time, God bless and stay safe. As we said, our next show is on January 14th when Carolyn Howard Johnson, whose book, The Frugal Book Promoter, has become like a Bible in the industry, and her many other books, will be our guest, and she'll share tips for promoting your work while not breaking your budget. So shall we wish everybody a happy Christmas, a wonderful new
Merry
year.
Merry Christmas.
Yep, and we'll be back on January 14th.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.